Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is MPB News.
Hi, this is Karen Brown. Thanks for checking out the Mississippi Edition podcast. If you like what you hear, click subscribe, hit like, or leave us a comment if your app has that feature. Then find other MPB podcasts by searching MPB Think Radio on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks. Good morning. It's 8:30 on Wednesday, April 21st. I'm Karen Brown, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, the CEO of a Jackson-based financial services organization testifies before the Senate on some of the banking challenges faced by rural communities. Then, 2020 was a census year, meaning the Magnolia State will soon have new voting districts drawn. In our sixth and final installment of Your Vote, Your Voice, we examine the policies and procedures that guide the pens that draw the maps. Plus, we look at the state of Mississippi's lottery, nearly 18 months since it launched. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. In the Deep South, financial access in rural communities has been an epidemic long before COVID-19. At nearly 16%, Mississippi carries the highest percentage of unbanked residents in the country, a number that soars to 21% when specifically referencing Black communities in the state. All of this according to the FDIC. Of the 20 largest banks in the Southeast, only one has branches in the Mississippi Delta. These are all issues being considered by the U.S. Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee. William Bynum, the CEO of Hope Enterprise Corporation, a Jackson-based financial services organization, testified before the committee yesterday, where he outlined the importance of community development financial institutions, or CDFIs.
CDFIs are uniquely effective because they are closest to the ground. They are financial first responders in so many communities that are disproportionately on the outside of the economy. Even with community banks who do a good job, CDFIs are uber focused on closing gaps in historically underserved communities. Again, targeting the precious and rare resources that Congress has allocated CDFIs to institutions that have a track record of serving those underserved rural communities, native communities, communities of color, low-income mom-and-pop businesses is vital. It's also critical that CDFIs be equipped to access home ownership assistance program. One of the speakers mentioned NeighborWorks America. They provide critical down payment assistance that helps close the gaps. We bring in resources from the Wall Street banks and target them to the communities that don't have access to those banks, where banks close in record numbers after the financial crisis. Without CDFIs, rural communities will continue to be on the outside looking in.
Aside from supporting individuals and small businesses, Bynum says CDFIs play a role in the health of rural communities, especially during the pandemic. During an exchange with Georgia Democrat John Ossoff, Bynum pointed to the efforts CDFIs take to fund health care access in the rural South.
Hope has financed rural health centers and hospitals in persistent poverty counties, and so we're familiar with the importance and challenges. These hospitals are critical sources of jobs and health, as we've seen during the pandemic, and you do not find traditional banks running to these projects, largely in part due to their dependence on federal support, because so many serve low-income patients who are underinsured, again, in the absence of Medicaid expansion. So the only way we would have been able to finance these hospitals is because of access to CDFI resources, like the New Market Tax Credit Program, which is hard to come by, but particularly in persistent poverty areas. Our analysis shows that only 5% of new market tax credit allocations have gone to rural persistent poverty counties. from 2003 to 2017. So there is significant access to resource gaps that limit opportunity and limit these rural communities from getting access to these critical life-saving resources.
Bynum also outlined the importance of personal transit in rural communities. During a time when employment is still hard for some to find, lack of transportation presents an additional layer of challenges.
If you do not have access to adequate transit, then you may as well be unemployed in rural areas because you have so much territory to cover. If you don't have a car or truck in rural areas, you may as well be unemployed. Low-income people and people of color in rural communities are more likely to be preyed upon and receive access to high-cost predatory financing to get access to mobile car loans and truck loans. And so transit solutions are vitally important. Again, CDFIs have a historic track record of addressing transit-related needs and financing to help close infrastructure gaps such as transit and healthcare and education.
The Hope Enterprise Corporation has financed more than $2.9 billion in Mississippi and surrounding states since 1994. The Senate committee will use the information in formulating banking policies. Coming up, 2020 was a census year, meaning the Magnolia State will soon have new voting districts drawn. In our sixth and final installment of Your Vote, Your Voice, we examine the policies and procedures that guide the pens that draw the maps. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
This is Mississippi Edition. I'm Karen Brown. Mississippi lawmakers will be working this year to redraw a number of maps that will impact voters in the state. 2020 was a census year, which means the U.S. Congress will reapportion its representation in the House of Representatives. On the state level, census data will be used to draw House and Senate districts for the next legislative elections in 2023. Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman has the statutory responsibility to appoint members to the committee that will consider how these new maps will be drawn. In our sixth and final installment of Your Vote, Your Voice, we begin by exploring the redistricting process with the leader of the Senate.
We were supposed to get the information on our decennial census last year by December. We are required to redistrict the state of Mississippi for its congressional districts beginning next congressional elections, which will be next March. They have to qualify by March, and then, of course, elections are runoffs and will be November, the following November. So we have a time deadline. They postponed because of the pandemic. They postponed us to receiving the information in September the 30th of this year. So we will be on a very short time frame to redistrict the four congressional districts in Mississippi. That's the first thing that will happen. Shortly thereafter, during the legislative session, we will redistrict the members of the Senate and the House. So all of those redistricts will be done probably early next year. We do that so that people will know whether or not they want to run for a particular office. They'll know the district in which they live and which they would be seeking.
Now, it's your responsibility to appoint a commission or a committee to oversee the redistricting?
It is. There are two committees, actually, in Mississippi, one appointed by the House and one appointed by the Senate. And they require individuals from each congressional district, and there are two that I've appointed from each congressional district. And there are a couple that are there based on their position in the Senate. For example, I appointed Senator Parker and Senator Turner Ford from the 1st Congressional District, Senator Hobson and Senator Simmons from the 2nd District, Senator Harkins and Senator Kirby from the 3rd District, Senator DeBar and Senator Wiggins from the 4th District. Then by the fact of their chairmanship of the election committee, Senator Jeff Tate will be on the committee, and the vice chairman, which is Senator Hobb Bryan. So our 10 are the 10 that I have outlined to you.
I know it's expected that the four congressional districts won't change. How many House districts are there and Senate districts?
The information we have on the general census, we'll have about 3 million people, which is about 700,000, and it takes probably about 500,000 to 600,000 or so. We're short of five, and we're easily have four. And obviously, when we get the census data, they have to be proportionately the same. So there have been certain parts of Mississippi that have experienced growth, and there have been certain parts of Mississippi who have experienced out-migration, which is another word for saying people have left. So that will require us to redistrict the four congressional districts.
When the census numbers come in, can they be interpreted? The numbers themselves, not necessarily where they come from, but the numbers themselves.
There are, we do pay attention in addition to the numbers to the majority-minority makeup. You know, there have been several Supreme Court cases on that. So we do pay attention to that aspect that's given to us by the census, but very little other, no economic decisions, no anything like that. Clearly, those are just left up to the committee to come up with. But one thing they do pay attention to, of course, is the majority-minority participation in each district.
Now, I know that there's electoral competitiveness or gerrymandering that runs along political lines. With Mississippi being overwhelmingly Republican, is it safe to assume that the lines will be drawn to favor Republican candidates?
No.
Do you want to add on to that?
I don't think I need to add on to it. We in the Senate, as you can see, the makeup of this committee is bipartisan. And we intend to anticipate looking at districts which are geographical in location, who make common sense for cities and counties where we don't have a lot of split precincts. I was a former Secretary of State here. Split precincts just drive everybody crazy, the circuit clerks and the voter. So we don't want split precincts. And so there'll be a lot of things that are taken into account. But we're redistricting Mississippi on the needs, economic needs, the normal political parts, the cities and the counties, and trying to maintain their integrity and not split up like five representatives for one city. What that ends up having is you don't have any representation. So, no, I think our major concerns will be the voter.
Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman, thank you so much.
It's good to see y'all, and we appreciate it.
The redrawing of district maps comes with inherent biases and complications. As Representative Ed Blackman explains, a key priority for many elected officials is to preserve the district that elected them. He shares more about the politics of redistricting with our Ashley Norwood.
Just like in the insect population, the bacteria population, the human population, survival is what it's all about. And the redistricting process, the best district that you have is the one you just got elected from. And most politicians are trying to, when it comes to redistricting every 10 years, you're trying to make sure that you have as close as you can to your chances, increasing your chances of being reelected. So that becomes the issue. And every redistricting scheme, very few politicians want to give up the core of their district. So you have terms such as gerrymandering, and most people don't understand what that is. But you know it. It's like one Supreme Court justice said about pornography. You know it when you see it. And that goes on a lot. And in Mississippi, we have a really serious problem, especially at the state level, because we have the minority districts or the African-American districts are packed. The white districts are packed with like-minded, like-raced people in them. And so you have, at the state level, you have about 50, 51 African-Americans in the legislature. But we're all packed in the districts, about 70-plus. Most of them are 70-plus percent of African-American majority districts. And that's fine when it comes to equalizing population, but it kind of skews what we do at the from a policy standpoint. It's based on, in Mississippi, unfortunately, it's if you're black, you tend to be a Democrat. If you're white, at least in the, from an electoral standpoint, you tend to be, Republicans tend to be white. So we have that issue coming up in the next redistricting process. It's always been a problem in Mississippi for as long as I've been involved in it.
I'm glad you mentioned gerrymandering, because that is a term that we've heard people associate with redistricting so often. And, I mean, what does that word even come from? Or is there a way to simply define it?
Well, gerrymandering is where you, the best example I can give you is a district that was in some years ago, I believe it's 1991 when it's developed, where you were trying to equalize population. You were trying to preserve the incumbent in office, so you had to find a way to do it. And if you're a Republican, for instance, and you suddenly you find that your population has dropped substantially in your district, and this did happen, and you want to remain in office, you're trying to get into Rankin County. Now, there's a river that separates a lot of that area, too. So we actually drew a district that went around the Pearl River and crossed over a bridge to get into Rankin County to find population. And if you look at a census map, you would find that there are very few dots in there. It's just land, not people, that you're trying to locate people to in order to create a district. That's gerrymandering. One, you have an intended purpose. You have to find an odd, unusual shape to get there, because districts generally are considered to be, they should be compact and contiguous. Now, if you have a stem connecting one piece of land to another piece, you can't. It's not compact and it's not contiguous. But it is contiguous to the extent they are connected, but not in the general sense that most people look at. Mm-hmm. Same thing was done in a Delta district, in a senatorial district. But you can start in Cleveland, Mississippi, and find your district weaving its way down through Yazoo County. So, and that was a black district, by the way.
Was that not too long ago? This sounds
familiar. Yeah, in fact, there was litigation concerning that, too. That was initially, Senator Simmons' district when he was in office, and Senator Blackman, my wife's district, when she was initially elected. Her district started out being, she had to campaign in Humphreys County, down here to Mississippi, all the way to the Lee County line. So how's that for gerrymandering?
Representative Ed Blackman with our Ashley Norwood. Work of redrawing Mississippi's maps will begin this summer. Coming up, we look at the state of Mississippi's lottery, nearly 18 months since it launched. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Join us each week for Everyday Tech on MPB Think Radio. We have an IT expert, a computer repair ace, and we troubleshoot your problems on the phones as well. Everyday Tech, Wednesdays at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Download the podcast now or listen on YouTube on the MPB Think Radio channel.
A contractor ever tell you the price of something and it sounds so high you think, maybe I'll try it myself? Some jobs just aren't that difficult, and yes, you can do it. If you want to find out how to do those things, listen to Fix It 101, podcast everywhere.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
This is Mississippi Edition. I'm Karen Brown. Somewhere between 55 and 60 new projects by the Department of Transportation have either begun or have been funded in the last 18 months, all a result of the Mississippi Lottery. The Mississippi Lottery has raised more than $84 million since last July alone, $80 million of it going to roads and bridges, the rest to the state's education system. Tom Shaheen, president of the Mississippi Lottery Corporation, who is retiring at the end of June, shares more about the lottery's impact with our Michael Guidry.
Fiscal year 2020, which ended last June 30th, We didn't see any really major declines. We saw a little bit of a slump back in March when the pandemic was at its strongest point. So we had a good year for the first 7 months. We returned over $70 million for roads and bridges. The summer months, July, the first couple of weeks started out great, and then we saw a slowdown in July and August and September, and then it all started picking back up again in October, November, and December, and we are on track for a pretty strong year in sales. Our budgeted amount was $365 for the year because we just didn't know exactly what COVID would do or not do to sales. You know, most of our customers are convenience stores, and so we weren't sure how well their business was going to go. So through April 10th, our gross sales are $391 million, and our budget for the year was $365. So we've made that. We will surpass our budgeted return of $91.7 million with this transfer coming up in about 7 days.
Based on the sales you've seen, we've seen some highs, we've seen some lows based on the pandemic. How would you assess Mississippians' appetite for the lottery?
I believe the players, you know, are still very excited about it. We introduced a three-digit game called Cash 3 this past September, which we initially were going to introduce back in May of fiscal year 2020, but COVID prevented that from happening because we couldn't get retailers in for training. That game continues to grow on a weekly basis. Powerball, Mega Millions, you know, it's jackpot-driven. So we had those two huge jackpots in end of December and January and in the part of February. So those games have done really well. And our instant games are holding very strong, still averaging about over 9 million a week now. So the reception for lottery is still strong. And, you know, basically the players compare us to what's around us in surrounding states. What they sometimes have a hard time understanding is those states had many, many years to build up their product mix. We're not quite 2 years old yet, and so we're still building.
We'll circle back a second. We talked a little bit about the legislative session, and the lottery was conceived as a way to address an infrastructure that needed serious attention, to secondarily help boost education funds. A little over a year and a half into the lottery now, is it doing its job?
Yeah, it's doing more than its job, and hopefully we can keep that up. Again, as evidenced by the 55 to 60 projects that DOT has going around the state, the money is being utilized quickly. Again, we don't have information, and it's too early to tell what the education money is going to be distributed to. So the lottery is producing. Our sales are still stronger than I think anybody would have anticipated. A state of just slightly under 3 million people. It's been, in my opinion, has been extremely successful here.
And your involvement in this successful run will be coming to a close on June 30th. As you've announced, you are stepping away from the Lottery Corporation. As president, you know, as the inaugural president of the Mississippi Lottery Corporation, what has it been like for you on a personal and professional level to see this concept go from, you know, past legislation, through the games, through the training of your vendors, through this first legislative session where that money was allocated? How's it been for you?
It's been an extraordinary adventure for me. This is the second lottery that I started as the president. I started the North Carolina Lottery in 2005, and they just celebrated actually 2006. I started working in 2005. Their lottery started in 2006, and they just celebrated their 15th year anniversary, and they are still growing strong. So, yes, it's an adrenaline rush. You know, you hit the ground in a state that I've never lived in before. I didn't know a whole lot about it other than what I could read on the Internet, and I was the only person. And basically, I was handed a lottery act, and so this is what the requirements are. Go build us a lottery, and that was it. We had a law firm that was helping out, and it basically was me hitting the streets looking for a building. Okay, and then then putting out requests for proposals for a gaming system, for instance, ticket printing, okay, an advertising contract, hiring employees, ordering furniture. It just, the list just goes on and on. And I started on June 1st, and by the time we got our team built, we were selling on November 25th, just about under 6 months.
Well, Tom Shaheen, current president of the Mississippi Lottery Corporation, we thank you for your time and your service to the state.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for interviewing us today. I appreciate it.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Thanks for listening to the Mississippi Edition podcast from MPB News and MPB Think Radio. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already, and if your app lets you, leave a comment or review. We really do appreciate it. Remember, you can always get in touch with MPB News on Facebook and Twitter, and fresh episodes of the podcast are posted every weekday morning. I'm Karen Brown. Thanks for listening. This is Mississippi Edition from MPB Think Radio.